giant robot smacking into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is November 1st. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I am here today with Brian Helmkamp. How's it going, Brian?
Hey, Ben. Going well.
Good. We are here at RubyConf 2012, broadcasting from the sponsors room. We're tucked back here in our corner with some podcasting setup, and interviewing a lot of interesting people. And Brian, you're next up on the hot seat.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, Brian, you run a product called Code Climate.
That's right.
Yeah. And what does Code Climate do?
So Code Climate is a hosted service that does automated code reviews of your Ruby and Rails applications. Mm-hmm. So teams use it to basically identify technical debt in their code bases and fix it, and also to make sure that their projects stay on track over time as they're making changes and adding new features.
Nice. That's a pretty good elevator pitch. Have you practiced that?
Not enough.
It's pretty refined. That's a pretty good picture. So how long ago did this start?
So in various forms, I've been working on it for more than a year and a half now.
Okay.
And the longest customers have been customers for over a year now. So
okay.
That was a recent milestone.
So we're using this. When did we sign up? How long ago was that?
You guys were within the first 2 or 3 months. So
oh, awesome.
Probably approaching a year at this point.
Cool. Very good. So what made you decide to launch this as a business? What were the early signs that this was something that would be worthwhile?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, I've been an engineering manager at a few different startups, and what I've seen is, you know, there's teams that are, they're working, they're producing a lot of code. These are skilled teams using what are considered sort of best practices. They're probably using maybe TDD, pair programming, short iterations, all the kind of things that you sort of expect a lot, like high-functioning teams to be doing these days. But what I saw over and over again was that even when doing all of that and having smart people with the best of intentions, there was a natural tendency for code bases to become sort of harder to maintain over the long term. Once you get after that first year, that second year, everyone I talked to kind of had the same feeling, which is like it's a bit harder to get new features into the app now than it was when we started. We kind of missed that greenfield feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was like, okay, that's interesting. Is there anything else that we could do to help resist that sort of downward pull? I'd played with static analysis tools in the past, like a lot of people have, and I didn't sort of continue to use them because they were kind of a little difficult to use, a little difficult to interpret the results. There wasn't a good way to, you know, share that information with my team or just dump a whole bunch of information out there, and it was kind of just up to you to sift through it and figure out what was important and when. So I thought about it for a bit and started prototyping the idea that we could run static analysis on, in an automated way as a service. And originally, it was just going to be a weekly email with no website. You'd add your Git repository, and everything would be just in this one email you get every week. It would have, charts actually embedded in the email and a summary and everything like that. So that's how it started. I kind of, went to conferences like this, actually, like RubyConf, and showed it to different people who were working on teams. And I said, is this something that you'd find valuable? How would you use this? And got a lot of good feedback. And that's kind of what led me to start developing it. Eventually, I realized I did not want to code an entire application in straight HTML email, otherwise I'd gouge my eyeballs out. So very quickly, it was a website with an email that includes some of the information, but that's kind of how it got started.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Are you a solo founder on this one? Is it just you?
I have a great designer named Steve Barry who helps me out with all of the design work, which is why it looks great, because I can't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm the only founder of the company.
Cool. So there's a lot of people warn against single founding startups,
mm-hmm.
Like Paul Graham in particular.
Yeah.
How have you found the emotional roller coaster that is running your own thing?
Well, let me back you up a second, because
please,
I don't consider Code Climate a startup. I consider it a small business. So, it's completely bootstrapped. There's no outside funding. There's no VCs involved, not even angel investors at this point. And I don't really intend to do any of that. It's really just intended to be a small, sustainable business. That's something that, I would find valuable in the work that I've done previously and that other people find valuable. So a small but growing customer base.
Mm-hmm.
I think that changes the model a little bit, right? I think when you hear Paul G speak, I think a lot of that is about, the kind of companies that he's working with, which are these startups that are like looking to create $1 billion companies. And Code Climate's never going to be a $1 billion company, and that's totally fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so being the single founder, I've sort of read some things, talked to people about like what the effect of that is, and there's definitely, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons. It wasn't really a specific decision I made to do it on my own, but I have really sort of high standards for the people I would work with, and it would have to be somebody who, you know, had all these, the right skill set, the right fit, so I've known for a long time and is very interested in this product, and it just didn't happen that, you know, the timing was right for any of those you know, those people to sort of join at that very beginning stage. So where I've ended up is solo founder. So what is the implications of that? It's definitely, you know, a little bit, the hardest part is at times, you know, you're kind of in the trenches by yourself. And so if something goes wrong or something goes really well, there's nobody really to commiserate with or to share that expression with. So, you know, you ask my friends, a lot of them, those, like, I'll be talking with them randomly someday, and I might start telling them about this, like, thing that I'm excited about launching. They're like, that was kind of out of nowhere. It's like, yeah, because right. I don't know anyone else to tell this to. But so it can be tough at times. But, you know, there are advantages too. So it's just, the sword is double-edged.
But are you doing any work outside this or?
No. So Code Climate at this point is my only thing. I was doing a little bit of freelance up until recently to help, you know, cover the bills, but I've sort of wound that down, and now it's great. All Code Climate all the time, which is a big reason why I wanted to make sure I was out here at RubyConf and, you know, sharing the product with people.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been, we're here in the sponsors room, the vendors room.
That's
so
right.
You've been pitching people on this today, I assume.
Yeah.
How does the pitch generally get responded to?
Yeah, so it's a lot of different reactions. You know, one thing that I wasn't quite expecting with Code Climate, I had a very specific vision in my mind for the use case. It was like teams that were kind of like the teams that I ran. They were, you know, a good collection of like senior developers. They were small teams, and, you know, they were just looking for an additional tool to help them sort of do the things they were already doing. But you hear people tell you about different ways that they're using it, which aren't really what you would think. So, for example, one thing I didn't expect was I got a lot of feedback from sort of engineering managers like, this is great for helping to train my less experienced engineers. I would, you know, love this because it's something I can take to them. I can show them, you know, example on Code Climate, and we can have a discussion about, you know, what the different ways to approach this are, and it can be a big learning tool. So it's just really interesting to hear the different, you know, the different ways people are using the product that you might not expect.
Yeah, and we maybe haven't covered this in a lot of detail in terms of, so at the end of the day, Code Climate will give you sort of a letter grade per class or even file, I guess, of code that you're looking at.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's sort of a really nice, like, along those training lines. It's nice to, it's certainly a simplification of everything that might be good or bad of a class, right?
Right.
But it also can be really nice to have that simplification. Like, this is a D. Okay, I understand that a D is bad and that there are four things
need
to be fixed.
Yeah, and, you know, it's an automated system, right? So it's not perfect. There's always got to be a human sort of interpreting the information and applying it. So, you know, do we stop and fix this now? Is this maybe even something that doesn't need to be fixed? Because this class is very difficult, but it hasn't changed in 3 years, and it just encodes this very specific algorithm that is itself very complicated, and it's fine.
Totally.
So, you know, it's not a tool to beat developers over the head with. Sometimes I get questions from people, not the people that are at, like, RubyConf, but just in other contexts. It'll be maybe non-technical people who are wondering, okay, is this like a tool that I can use to sort of like keep tabs on my developers?
Yeah.
And sometimes those people come with larger checkbooks
right,
than the
exactly.
developers.
So you say, absolutely it is.
But I basically steer them away from that. And the tool is intended to be interpreted by people who are technical. It's intended to be used, it's, you know, built by a developer, me, for developers. You know, some engineering managers find it useful. These are people who, you know, are either still coding or are very close to code, understand everything that's going on, and they get value out of it. It's not for the CEO. You know, there are companies in the static analysis space which build reports that are intended for CEOs to look at and see how their teams are doing. They sell them for, you know, $5,000 a month.
And the developers hate them.
And that's not what Code Climate is.
Yeah.
But that's another sort of interesting way that people might think about it.
Yeah. So to me, so you said that you were inspired to create this to solve a problem of apps that are 2 years old become harder to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the million-dollar question is, does it work? Does it, now that you have Code Climate, are my two-year-old Rails apps going to be easier to work on?
Well, there's no silver bullet, is the, you know, one of the sort of constant truisms of software engineering. If there were, then we wouldn't get paid nearly as well.
Right.
You know, it's a positive force, right? So, you know, that's how I like to think about it, is if you're going to be maintaining something over the long term, you want as much... There's a natural tendency for code bases to become harder to maintain, and you want as much on your side as possible in order to sort of reverse that trend. And ideally, make things so that it's easier to maintain over time. You can get features done quicker because you have the right tools and abstractions at your disposal when you're further along. So, yeah, in that sense, you know, we've had a lot of teams that have found it very, you know, very positive impact on their code base after they've been using it for a few months and using it beyond that.
Well, that's great. I like that you brought up the fact that you still need a human to interpret the results, because that was actually one of my questions for you was, okay, so this class is a D, but I don't ever change it, so why do I care? Like, if there's no churn in there, and then there isn't really actually any pain other than maybe I have to read it every once in a while to understand it, and that's hard.
Yeah, so that's right. So one of the things that I launched within the last week or so is a specific mashup of the quality of the classes compared to the amount of times that they've been changed. So you can sort of look at things in those four quadrants, right? There's things that are good quality and don't change very much. That's great. There might be things with low quality that don't change much. Like you just said, those aren't necessarily things to worry about, but the ones you really need to focus on are things which are, you know, of dubious quality and are changing very frequently, and those are what I usually recommend people focus on first.
Interesting. Yeah, and one of the important questions of this is, like, does this change behavior? Okay, so I know that this class is a C. Does that actually mean that people pay attention to that? And one of the things I've noticed is we're using this at Thoughtbot with a lot of our client projects, and there's a campfire notification that happens when a class changes letter grades. And actually, I think that does help motivate people, because, for instance, like, we do a lot of open source work, and like just the other day, someone like pushes changes to an open source, one of our repos, and suddenly campfire is like, oh, this class improved from a B to an A. And someone's like, oh, nice job.
Yeah.
And like, it's good to get that kind of like kudos almost.
Yeah, I mean, there's both, you know, there's feedback if there's new problems introduced, but there's also feedback when you're fixing existing issues. And, you know, both of those things are valuable at different ways and different times. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, I've been coding myself before, and I, you know, maybe I copied and pasted something and made a mental note that, like, okay, need to pull this out into an object before I'm finished, got distracted, pushed it up, and moved on to the next thing. And Code Climate says, you know, sees that and says, oh, wait, like, you know, there's actually a new duplication here, which is, you know, pretty substantial. Just like, oh, I forgot, you know, like I was working on that and I didn't get a chance to do that last refactoring. Helps keep you honest.
Sure. Right. It's like automated reminders of, hey, this might be bad and you didn't realize or remember.
It's a guardian angel for your code base.
Oh, nice. There's a little subheading for you. Are you running any A/B tests on your landing pages or anything within the app?
I've done a little bit on like the, you know, the top level marketing pages, but at this point, I've been focused more on, you know, just getting the customer satisfaction up, and then tracking that with, you know, people converting from trials to paid accounts is probably the biggest one. Are they getting, you know, getting set up properly and able to sort of figure out how to use it in the right way? So it's a lot of educational stuff. I'm a big proponent of doing a lot of qualitative analysis before moving on to the quantitative stuff. And generally I'm more in the qualitative phase in terms of, you know, getting feedback from customers
That's something funny to hear from a guy who built a static analysis tool.
Yeah, well,
it should send you a report that's like, your code looks nice today.
Yeah.
It has a good feeling about it.
Yeah, well, there was going to be the product is called Code Climate, and the original email mockups, it was all going to be weather based. So it would be like, oh, it was, you know, drizzly this week, or if it was really bad, it'd be like, you know, it looks like Hurricane Sandy out there, or whatever it is. But that's kind of given way to the A through F ratings being more prevalent.
What's been the biggest surprise for you so far running the business?
That's a good question. There's so many, but at varying sizes. I guess I think that the value of aggregating things together into a rating that you can simply sort of see, this A through F thing, that was not there when I launched the product. It was a lot more, I mean, your complexity is a 45 and your duplication is a 13 and all that sort of stuff. You guys probably saw that back when it, you know, when you first started using it. And people seem to get a lot of value just from having everything kind of summarized for them. Mm-hmm. They really like the ability to drill down into it and know that they can if they want to. But even once they know that they can, they're just like, they kind of take it on face value. So I haven't gotten, what I was expecting was a lot of feedback to come in right away. I was like, this number, you know, this seems wrong. Like, this rating is off. Like, you're not taking into account these five other metrics. Because it doesn't have a whole lot of different metrics that it takes into account. It's pretty few, and mostly the ones that it launched with. But because it's aggregated in a way where you can say, okay, you just put that stamp on it and say it's a B, people get that, and totally. They appreciate that. And you just tell them how that changes, and that's kind of the right level of the way they're thinking about it. And I thought it was going to need to be a lot more detailed all the time, like in all of the layers.
Interesting. It's fascinating how, you know, it's technically like an oversimplification, right? Like, you can't look at a class and actually give it a grade that everyone would agree with, right, if they looked at it. But it does help as an indicator. It's like, maybe this isn't exactly a B in terms of like how the whole world would rate it.
Right.
But just having a relative marker that maps to something I can understand
and
is
here's
really
a
helpful.
Dirty secret. I mean, those ratings A through F, I had built an algorithm for computing those. And the last thing to do in the algorithm is creating the rubric, right? So I get it all into points. So I'm like, okay, what's an A through an F? And I threw my finger in the air and created a scale once, and I've never changed it. And nobody's ever. I mean, I get very little feedback that says like, it seems like it's a little too harsh or it's too lenient. It's just held up, but it worked out okay. It's an exponential scale for those interested, sort of under the covers, between, you know, 2, 4, 8, 16 for the different ratings. But you can't actually tell that when you're using the app, and it was just invented one day and is sort of held up.
Interesting. So you dog food this, right?
Pardon?
You dog food this? You run it on your own code?
Yes, Code Climate does analyze Code Climate and is mostly satisfied, but a little bit displeased with the pre-RubyConf coding.
The late night
the,
coding
the
session.
The hackfest up to
you,
now.
What are the limitations of this static analysis? Is there stuff that you're missing that if you looked at it as a human, you would be, oh, this has got to be changed?
Well, one of the big ones is test coverage. So to do any coverage analysis, you have to actually be able to execute the test suite.
Mm-hmm.
So Code Climate can't execute your code. It can't execute your test suite, so there's no coverage information. That's a big one. Beyond that, when humans interpreting it, there's just so many different layers of, you know, cognitive processing that are going on to sort of figure out what's okay and what's not and what, like, how you should change this.
Right.
So one thing I say to people a lot when they use the tool is, you know, it comes out and it says, here's all of your smells. But those aren't all things that necessarily need to be resolved. A smell is kind of like a pointer to a potential problem.
Right.
It's not a, definitive to-do of something to fix. So I don't recommend people go into the tool and sort of try to, like, fix every single thing in this list, because I think that can be, in some cases, actually counterproductive. You can end up contorting your code to sort of satisfy a tool in a way that actually isn't readable by humans. And that's ultimately the idea with maintainable code, is to have code that a human can understand quickly, right? You write it once, you read it 1,000 times.
Yep.
Code Climate reads it in its own way, but optimized for the human, and let Code Climate be a pointer to that.
This is a weird question. So what do you think? If you wanted to give a competitor a plan to destroy Code Climate, to like beat you at the game, what would you tell them?
That's basically asking me what my roadmap is. Isn't it?
Maybe. Or your weaknesses?
I get a lot of questions about other language support.
Mm-hmm.
I like getting those questions. It's all Ruby right now. It's ground up and 100% Ruby. But I think that there are markets in other languages for helping teams in this way. Code Climate doesn't do it right now, but if it's as successful as I hope it is, it'll do it down the road. So there's some, I think there's market opportunity there that I would like to take, but surely, someone else could make an attempt at that.
Yeah.
It's an interesting market because, people don't use a lot of alternatives They usually, they might, you know, use some of the open source programs on the command line occasionally, or they don't do, you know, they don't use anything. So it's kind of a lot of education in terms of sort of helping teams understand exactly how to use it. And that's why a lot of my efforts that I've been focused on recently are kind of in this content and also sort of training category of like, okay, you've got all this information now, and it's even like information that's pretty easy to digest. But how do you use that every day or every week inside of your development process that already exists? So I'm trying to sort of focus on that more.
Yeah. So you recently had a great post on your blog about splitting up active record objects. That seems like sort of right in line with your customer base, right? You're writing how to... Okay, so maybe I did notice there are some smells in this thing. What do I do about it? And that's almost like the how-to guide.
Yeah, and you know, eventually I think there's an opportunity to sort of cross-link that stuff to some extent. So you can say, okay, you have this complex method. What are different patterns for decomposing complex methods? What are the principles involved? What are the refactorings that you can apply? So eventually I'd like to sort of bring all that information together for people in a quicker way.
Hmm. Cool. So what does success look like for you?
Success for me looks like not having to work for anybody ever again. That's pretty much the big line in the sand. Uh-huh. Is if I can build a business which is it has happy customers, is sustainable, that is something I'm passionate about, like Code Climate, and I can just focus on that and not have to not even have to do freelance work, that would be fantastic. And it's not there yet, so I really especially appreciate all the early support on it. Mm-hmm. But that's really it. I'm not looking to raise a bunch of money and make this thing worth $1 billion. I just want to help developers get their the work that they're already doing done more effectively, faster, more maintainable code bases, and it needs to pay the bills. In New York, those bills are higher than they would be elsewhere. Uh-huh. But that's what success is for me.
Cool, sounds good. So, if people wanted to get in touch with you and or try Code Climate, how would they do that?
Yeah, so Code Climate is codeclimate.com. There's a 14-day free trial for commercial accounts, for private accounts. It's the same model as GitHub. So we do free, unlimited hosting for open source projects, and we just crossed about 2,500 open source projects. So really happy about that. Mm. And then we've got the private accounts for teams using who have their own code bases that they want to keep private. Then there's a 14-day trial for that. So that's where I'd recommend that they start and check that out. If anyone wants to reach me, then my email address is Brian, Bryan, at Code Climate, and people can email me directly, and I'm happy to help them with any questions they have about how best to use the tool, using it in their in their workplace or anything like that.
Cool. Well, do you have a Twitter handle that we should
I do.
Put out there?
So there's the Code Climate Twitter account, which I've been using to tweet a lot of sort of open source and object design, refactoring, sort of links like that. So if you're interested in that sort of content, like the kind of stuff I blog about, you want to follow Code Climate. My personal Twitter is Bryanary. That's Bryanary.
All right. Well, thanks very much for stopping by, Brian.
Thanks, Ben.
Take care.